Hi, and welcome to this audio edition of Polygamy, What Love Is This? With host Doris Hansen. On this program, we discuss polygamy and Mormon fundamentalism from a biblical Christian perspective. We talk about the history of polygamy, its modern-day fruit, share stories from people who have escaped polygamy, and talk about current events relating to polygamy. You can learn more about the video edition of this program at whatloveisthis.tv. And now, here's Doris.
Welcome to our show tonight. I am Doris Hansen, the host of the program, and we are grateful that you've invited us into your home to share a part of your evening with us. Before we get started, I'd like to remind our viewers that we have the annual coat drive going on. If you have some new or gently, very gently used coats for men, women, or children, you can bring them by the TV20 offices at 314 South Redwood Road, Monday through Friday, 9 p.m. to 3 p.m., and help to make and give warmth to the homeless men, women, and children of our city. You can also bring some socks, and of course, we would prefer that you bring new socks and not used socks. But it would be nice to bring them down and put in our boxes that are right here in the foyer of the offices. I'd also like to mention that a huge victory for the rights of women and children in Canada was sustained last week when the British Columbian Judge Bauman ruled that Canada's law banning polygamy was according to their Charter of Rights. The justice argued that banning polygamy does not violate the religious rights of the citizens to believe however they want to, but that they do have the right to make laws regarding behavior in religion to protect its citizens. Canada does have the responsibility to uphold the ban on a system that supports and results in abuse, neglect, and inequality as polygamy does. So we gave three cheers to Texas a couple of weeks ago, and tonight we're giving three cheers to Canada as well. But this isn't the end of it. They have an appeal system just like this country does, and more than likely it may go to appeal to find out whether or not this will go further up in the courts there. So we need to be on our toes. We need to keep plugging away, bringing out the truths, and telling the world that the real story isn't sister wives, but the hundreds of silenced women and children who are intimidated to keep quiet and held prisoner by the invisible chains of the religion of polygamy. They all say that they do it for religious reasons, but not one of them can give a biblical example that polygamy is commanded or condoned or used by God, the God of the Bible, to earn eternal life. In 1890, Wilford Woodruff, who was the presiding Mormon president and himself had six wives and 33 children, claimed that he was given a directive by God that the Mormon people were to stop the practice of polygamy. And this directive is now referred to as the Manifesto of 1890, the first manifesto. Not only did Wilford Woodruff continue to live polygamy after the manifesto, but records show that hundreds of Mormon authorized plural marriages continued to take place after the 1890 manifesto. In fact, it was so blatantly and purposefully disregarded that in 1904, they issued a second manifesto, but this time they said they really meant it. The Mormons had been taught by Joseph Smith and subsequent patriarchs that polygamy was essential for salvation, that it was an everlasting covenant, and they weren't going to give it up that easily. Shockingly, it was the leadership of the church who were primarily the ones involved and who were lying about it. Lying was an accepted behavior of Mormon polygamists, certainly is the case with the polygamy groups today, and often wrong and illegal activities were embraced and considered okay if it would protect their church and serve the greater good. Of course, the greater good always meant the greater good for the Mormon purpose. Brigham Young once said, and I quote, "I live above the law, and so do these people." Well, no truer words were ever spoken by a Mormon. Matthias F. Cowley said that he'd lie like hell to protect his brethren. Our show tonight focuses on the Reed-Smoot hearings, which reveals a prodigious amount of lying under oath when the Mormons were taken to task for continuing their practice of polygamy. Ohio Congressman Robert W. Taylor, no relation to the Taylors of polygamy, was the prosecuting attorney in the Smoot hearings, and in his closing statement he said, quote, "Now, gentlemen, this is the broad claim we make, that the Mormon Church is in fact higher than the law, that the hierarchy and its members are in fact higher than the law," end quote. Meaning, of course, that they acted and behaved and expected themselves to be higher than the law. That was their attitude, and that was the premise that the early Mormon Church and their polygamous leaders took from the very beginning. And that same attitude has effectively passed down through the generations of the Mormon Church and naturally into the polygamy groupthink. To discuss the Reed Smoot hearings tonight, we've invited as our guest Kay Brown. She's been here several times before, and it's always a great pleasure to have her as our guest, and she spent a lot of time researching to help out on the show tonight to get some of the information that we've had. So I'd like to introduce and welcome back to our show Kay Brown.
Thank you so much, Doris.
Thank you.
Pleasure to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you, as always. And I want to thank you. You have done a lot of work in preparing for the information. There's a lot of information to go through for this.
It was very interesting reading. I learned a lot from it, so I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, that's great.
To study.
You know, you have begun a new ministry. And before we get into the hearings, would you briefly tell our viewers what it is you're doing?
Yes. Okay. Well, you know, lots of things can affect individuals and communities. Polygamy is one of those things.
Mm-hmm.
What we want to do, there's a few of us that want to have a ministry where people will email into us, and then we will take their emails, send out information to them when there is an issue that we want to speak up collectively as a voice, because many voices are better than just a few.
Mm-hmm.
And so our ministry is actually called Speaking Up for Truth, and the email is the same. It's speakingupfortruth@gmail.com. And so if you send an email in, we don't just automatically use your email address to send to any cause, but you'd be notified if there was something we wanted to collect your voices and then be able to send that off to legislators.
Mm-hmm.
And
that
so,
would be state legislators or national legislators?
Mm-hmm. Any important cause. And the thing that we want right now to speak out about is that we're hearing that, you know, there are people who are wanting to decriminalize polygamy.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is actually the first issue we want to address.
So you want to collect people who have a word to say that they don't want it decriminalized?
Correct.
And then you will forward their names or their petitions or whatever.
Once they responded back to us sending the information to them and saying, this is the cause, do you want to speak out about it?
Mm-hmm.
Then we would forward those to the legislators, but we would not use it, you know. And they need to be 18 years or older.
18 years or older. Okay.
In order for us to be able to do that.
Okay.
And we could give them more information when we contact them, and then when they send it back, you know, there'll be a subject line.
And we need to have a voice because the Sister Wives crowd are going all over the country speaking to groups and to colleges and to various places, making polygamy legitimatized as a viable alternative lifestyle for the country, and people are starting to buy it. And we need to get some collective voices to go out against this, because it's against the law. It is a felony. It does harm. This Canada case proves that it does harm to women and children and to the male species as well in many
definitely.
Circumstances. Mm-hmm. So email Kay at what's that email again?
It is speakingupfortruth@gmail.com.
Okay. So we invite our viewers to get involved. It's the only way that we are really going to be able to bring truth to bear on this culture of polygamy. Now, on the resources that we studied up for this show tonight, and so that we won't have to mention it every time we do a quote, why don't we just say up front what resources we use to get our quotes and to get our information. What did you use for yours?
I studied this book. It's called The Mormon Church on Trial, And Michael Harold Paulus is the editor. It's actually the transcripts that were written and collected, and they're actually public record.
Mm-hmm.
He took those, edited those, put them in this book. It's about a 700-page book, and so most of the things actually that we're going to talk about tonight are direct quotes. We'll be reading a lot.
Mm-hmm. They are actual historical quotes from this congressional hearing that took place. Mm-hmm. And the information that I use to collect for the quotes I'm using tonight, I use three volumes of testimony entitled Committee on Privileges and Elections of the United States Senate. I downloaded three volumes from the internet in huge PDF files. One of them was over 100 megs, the other one was almost 100 megs, and the other one was over 75 megs. And then I also used Mormon Polygamy by Richard Van Wagner and Solemn Covenant by Carmen Hardy, along with some other various articles and books, but those were the main material that I used. So if anyone wants to study up on the Reed Smoot hearings, you can go to any of these volumes that we've talked about and get some very good detailed information, more than probably you ever want to know. But before we get started on some of these quotes, there are going to be right now viewers who are watching that don't have a clue what the Reed Smoot hearings were all about. So I'm briefly going to familiarize you with what they were. Now, I've already mentioned that in 1890, when the Mormons claimed that they gave up polygamy with this manifesto, the United States government had made that a condition on being statehood. And so 6 years later, in 1896, Utah became a state. Well, immediately after it became a state in 1896, the number of plural marriages rose, spiked up, which prompted the Salt Lake Tribune to accuse the Mormon leaders of deception. In fact, the year that the statehood was granted, the future Mormon president, Joseph F. Smith, said, and I quote, "Take care of your polygamist wives now. We don't care for Uncle Sam now." Now, that shows their mode of thinking at that time. On page 251 of Solemn Covenant, Ray Stannard Baker is quoted as saying that Mormon polygamy was so common that leaders in Salt Lake City could take a streetcar in any direction and arrive home. When Wilford Woodruff died, Lorenzo Snow reigned over the Mormons, and polygamy continued to thrive. Wilford Woodruff was a polygamist, Lorenzo Snow was a polygamist, and the same year that Lorenzo Snow became president, this is all after the manifesto, B.H. Roberts was denied a seat in the United States House of Representatives because he was a polygamist. Now, Reed Smoot was an apostle of the Mormon Church, and with the approval of church leaders, he ran for and was elected to the United States Senate in 1903. And the Mormon church leaders expected that Reed Smoot would be able to perform valuable services for the Mormons as a senator. After his election, huge volumes of protests from around the country, church groups and women's organizations were aroused against Reed Smoot. Many of them were concerned because Reed Smoot was an apostle, a member of the highest governing body of the Mormons, and its leadership approved of and practiced plural marriage. In response to this uproar against Smoot, an investigation was opened to discover whether he was qualified for the office of U.S. Senator. The investigation, which we're going to be talking about now, lasted over 3 years. It produced over 3,500 pages of testimony. They were never able to prove that Reed Smoot was a polygamist, but they did prove that he had a strong sentiment for polygamy. Now, there was the National Congress of Mothers and other things that came up with this protest. Would you tell us about that?
Yes. This National Congress of Mothers, over 2 million of them, demanded that Smoot be sent home. And on April 19, 1904, the Salt Lake Tribune had an article which read as follows: "The following resolution, proposed in Washington, D.C., was adopted by a standing vote of the Daughters of the American Revolution, only one delegate dissenting. Whereas the and this is the quote, "Whereas the Mormon Church teachers and many of its leaders defiantly practice polygamy, which is a crime against the government and the United States, and tends to the degradation of women, the destruction of the home, which is the bulwark of the nation's safety, and the jeopardy of our sacred institutions, we most earnestly protest against the continuance of an apostle of the Mormon Church in an official position in the United States.
Now, I've heard some Mormon historians talk about these people that protested against Reed Smoot seating in the Congress, and they have very conveniently said it was the Protestant people who made up these people who protested, but that isn't true. That Protestants were involved in it, yes, because polygamy is not a Christian behavior.
Right.
But it wasn't just the Protestants. But they make it sound like we're the bad guys, mm-hmm. you know. And yeah. But there were other people involved, not just Protestants in
protesting. No, there were
protesting.
A lot. There were a lot, actually, over 2 million of just the women alone.
Yeah, the women organizations. Mm-hmm. Now, there were prosecution charges. There were 6 prosecution charges against that was brought out for in this testimony. Plus, mm-hmm. there were 4 main arguments against Smoot by the prosecution. So would you explain to our viewers what those 6 and then what those 4 were?
Yes, I'll actually read them directly. Number 1 is the LDS priesthood had supreme authority in all things temporal and spiritual. Number 2, the first presidency and 12 apostles were the supreme administrators of this authority. Number 3, the church's authorities had not abandoned the principles and practice of political dictation, nor abandon belief in polygamy and polygamous cohabitation. Number 4, the church's attitude was evidenced by its teachings. Number 5, this body of officials, of whom Senator-elect Smoot is one, had sought to pass a law nullifying enactments against polygamous cohabitation. And number 6, protect and honor the violators of the laws against polygamy and polygamous cohabitation. Now, the 4 main arguments that you mentioned are these. Number 1, and these are against Smoot being seated as a senator. Mm-hmm. Smoot was a polygamist, and later that was claimed to be false.
Right, they couldn't prove he was.
They couldn't prove he was. Number 2 is he had taken an oath against the state of Utah and the United States government. Number 3, he would do whatever church officials asked. And number 4, he condoned the continued practice of polygamy and unlawful cohabitation.
Which that is true. We've found that is true. He did condone it, but
by
he didn't
his actions.
Do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Now, I noticed in number 6, it says that one of their concerns, was the prosecution's charges, was that they protect and honor the violators of the law against polygamy and polygamous cohabitation. Isn't that what's going on today?
Exactly.
The people who are violating the law against polygamy are being protected, and
yes.
in some cases, they're actually being honored.
Yeah, not enough is being done. It's just wrong all the way around. It's still illegal.
There's something upside down mm-hmm. going on. According to many historians, President Joseph F. Smith's testimony. Now, Joseph F. Smith was the president of the Mormon Church.
And prophet
yeah. of the Mormon mm-hmm. Church. And according to many historians, his testimony during these hearings was the most damaging of the entire investigation. Mm-hmm. He repeatedly and categorically denied that he or Lorenzo Snow or Wilford Woodruff had authorized plural marriages after the manifesto. Mm-hmm. He denied that there were any secret polygamous marriages anywhere in the world, and they were going on in Canada and Mexico.
Yeah.
He
yeah.
denied even hearing that anyone encouraged or recommended plural marriage after the manifesto. Mm-hmm. And his denials increased hostility toward himself, toward Reed Smoot, and toward the Mormons. Mm-hmm. Now, there was a faithful Mormon, George Q. Morris, and he said that Joseph F. Smith's testimony left Mormonism never so much disliked in all its history, mm-hmm. end quote. So obviously, hostility toward the Mormonism and toward the church itself came from within its own ranks, not from outside.
That's right.
And the Mormon church and polygamy groups need to realize and understand that fact.
Yes.
It's what they did that caused the hostility, not any prejudice against them in particular.
Right.
Now, there's 2 examples that I want to use of Joseph Smith's testimony. The first one is when he's asked about the Book of Mormon. And I think this is a very interesting testimony. And so we're going to put it up on the screen. Now, remember, he's the president of the church, and he's asked about the Book of Mormons and polygamy. So the chairman asks Joseph F. Smith, that is the Book of Mormon. Mr. Smith says, yes, sir, that's the Book of Mormon. The chairman asked, is the doctrine of polygamy taught in that revelation? Mr. Smith, taught in it? The chairman, yes. Mr. Smith said, it is emphatically forbidden in that book. And the chairman says, in that book, it's emphatically forbidden? And Mr. Smith says, it is. So no doubt the senators were rather confused that their own Book of Mormon, the keystone of their religion, prohibited the polygamy that they fought so hard to keep. And notice that Joseph F. Smith, the president of the church, did not pull rank on verse Jacob 2:30. As all the polygamists in the Mormon church does today, and that supposedly authorizes the polygamy in question. He didn't say that verse said it was okay. He said it's prohibited in that book. We wonder if he knew something that modern Mormons didn't know what that verse meant. Anyway, talk about the Salt Lake Herald. What did they say?
Well, the editor of the Salt Lake Herald said this, the evasions of the president are but a repetition of the old trickery and phraseology which has been trilled into the ears of the unwary ever since the ill-starred days of the first of the prophets. Also, such elusive and barren sophisms place the president of the powerful Mormon organization in an extremely pathetic and undignified attitude. Much of President Smith's testimony only proved the truth of what this article is charging. And it came from the transcripts, from their own mouths.
Right, right, so. Exactly. Now, regarding the law of Sarah, in the Doctrine and Covenants, section 132, the polygamy doctrine, it says that there needs to be the consent of the first wife for a man to take another wife. And so Joseph F. Smith, the president of the church, was questioned about that as follows. Senator Pettus asked Smith in the testimony, have there been in the past plural marriages without the consent of the first wife? Mr. Smith said, I don't know of any, unless it may have been Joseph Smith himself. Well, that's true. Senator Pettus said, well, he asked, is the language that you have read construed to mean that she is bound to consent? Mr. Smith said, well, the condition is that if she does not consent, the Lord will destroy her. But I don't know how he will do it. Senator Bailey asked, is it not true that in the very next verse, if she refuses her consent, her husband is exempt from the law which requires her consent? Mr. Smith answered, yes, he is exempt from the law which requires her consent. And Senator Bailey asked, well, she's commanded to consent, but if she does not, then he is exempt from the requirement? And Mr. Smith says, then he is at liberty to proceed without her consent under the law. Senator Beveridge asked, in other words, her consent amounts to nothing? Mr. Smith, it amounts to nothing but her consent. Isn't that sad?
It's very sad, and it's very much double talk. It's phraseology,
yeah,
exactly what that article was talking about.
That's all it is. And they take that and they use it to threaten the women from those days clear up until today. They still do that.
Yeah.
They still do it. So the conclusion of these hearings came out in somebody's remark. What was that he said?
Yeah. It says, the difference between polygamy, fornication, or adultery is that in Utah, a man comes out and says, A is my wife, B is my wife, and C is my wife. And of course, we know legally only A is a legally recognized wife.
Right.
And from all this, Utah became the laughingstock of America, and indeed, oftentimes still is. And Smith said that no polygamous marriages occurred after the manifesto and the Supreme Court ruling, and the LDS members had agreed to it by a vote in conference.
And that's a lie. Mm-hmm. Smith, the president of the church, lied about that.
Yes. Apparently there really wasn't a vote even in conference, according to some of the testimony that I read, but... So, and in his testimony, Joseph F. Smith stated that if they, the leaders, saw any wrong, they simply winked.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that something that they would just blatantly do that?
Well, they would send people down to Mexico for polygamous marriages with church-authorized documents for Anthony Ivins to marry them in polygamous relationships.
Yeah.
So they didn't only wink. They were turning a blind eye to it.
They were. And sometimes performing ceremonies themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, and lied about. Mm-hmm. So is illegal cohabitation and polygamy just splitting hairs? What's the deal with that?
Yes, it is. It is splitting hairs. They're the same. I mean, illegal cohabitation, you know, if they're claiming to be married. So it really is. And it was generally believed that the state of Utah broke its pledges to the United States government by not forsaking polygamy and illegal cohabitation. They did not live up to their own manifesto.
Exactly. And they had to do that in order to become a state.
Mm-hmm.
And so once that happened, they blew it all away.
Yeah. President Smith made it clear that the LDS Church, and this is such double talk, did not believe polygamy is done away with. They just got direction to stop it, so they did before they would be compelled by the U.S. government to stop it. Joseph F. Smith himself admits under oath that he broke the laws of Utah and the nation by his practice of polygamy and illegal cohabitation. And the comment is in the hearings is that he seemed confused about the meaning of the manifesto. Joseph F. Smith said that his personal belief was that after the manifesto, polygamy was not practiced. Now, this is really where the double talk comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Not practiced and was not stopped. Now,
which is it?
Your guess is as good as mine.
And this is why they said that Joseph Smith's testimony was really the most damaging.
Well, it really
was. Because he's the head of the church, and he just comes up with all of this prevarication. And
he's the authority, and so that's why the damage is so great, is here he is, the prophet, the president of the church, and you know, he's saying these things, and so it does have credibility to it, to the people, you know.
Mm-hmm. And these are Senate hearings. These aren't just some you know, living room conversation. These are Senate hearings.
That's right. And the LDS Church deceitfully separated the taking of additional wives after the manifesto, calling it practicing. Now, here's a word play, practicing polygamy from illegal polygamous cohabitation, which really is living with previous polygamous wives after the manifesto.
Mm-hmm.
And during the hearing, Smith opted to affirm rather than swear. When they asked him to swear
under oath,
he said he would affirm under oath, but he would not swear. And the reasoning that he gave was, we believe in the scriptures, swear not at all. And yet, they swear oaths in the temple, and, you know.
They were swearing some mighty oaths in the temple in those days.
Yeah, the blood oath and their vows.
Mm-hmm. Well, previous to the Reed-Smoot hearings, B.H. Roberts had been denied a seat in Congress because he had three wives. But what happened during these hearings about the B.H. Roberts polygamy?
He admits that he married a third wife. The first and the second wives did not consent to him for, you know, taking the third wife. And when he was asked if they knew about it, he said no, not at the time. When asked if they knew at the time, he answered, oh, two or three years later, I think. But a number of their friends knew, but his wives did not know. And I just think that is so tragic.
It is tragic.
You know?
And so when they did find out, no doubt they found out through the media.
Yeah.
Isn't that awful? Well, Francis M. Lyman, he was a polygamist, and he was an apostle as well. And he also made contradictory statements. He even blamed God for the lies that he told. He said that Reed Smoot didn't know that he, Lyman, lived polygamy, that he had plural marriages, even though it was common knowledge. Everybody knew that he had plural wives, but he said Reed Smoot didn't know. So this prompted the question during the hearings, well, was Smoot so uninformed and so non-observant of the obvious, of something that everybody else knew? And if he was, maybe he wasn't qualified to be a senator. And so Lyman said during his testimony that his answers were guided by the Spirit of the Lord. So did they really believe that God was that confused? If God, if he was guiding their answers? It's just absolutely Mm-hmm. It sounds a lot like something that Warren Jeffs answered several times, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. It does. It really does. There was a Mr. Hiles that prosecuted more polygamists than any other had prosecuted. And he testified that invariably, if we asked, this is a direct quote of his, invariably, if we would ask a Mormon whether he would obey the laws of the United States or the laws of the church, he would say that he would obey the laws of the church. In every case, the judge would offer the defendant who was convicted clemency or suspension of judgment if he would agree to obey the law. And he would be asked whether he would, in the future, obey the law. And he would say no. When asked why not, he would say, I choose to obey the laws of God rather than man-made laws. And, I mean, you know, comments were made that clearly compared polygamy to a man visiting a prostitute, one considered dirty, while the other somehow glorified. The defense claimed that brothels were protected by the committee, a charge not dignified with an answer. Even so, this is assuming that two wrongs would make a right.
Yeah.
So there really is just no argument there, and the comment was very out of place. But you know, Doris, at least harlots don't call their actions godly, and they don't call it righteous fornication.
Right, right. They tell it for what it is, and don't bring God into it, saying that he is commanding something that he has condemned.
That's right. And it seems to me that not all people believe that they are capable of fidelity to just one spouse, but God created us to be monogamous.
Mm-hmm.
I think you've said on the show before that, you know, there's pretty much equal man
equal
for
births.
Woman.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 2, I just wanted to bring this out. It says, each man should have his own wife and each woman her own husband. And I know we've used that quote an awful lot on the show.
You betcha. Well, we've got a lot of information to go through. Obviously, we won't probably get through it all, but we're going to make it a good try. But anyway, we have a message here that we would like to share with you. We're going to open up the telephone lines now. Our number is 801-973-8820. Please call in if you would like to put your 2 cents worth or ask questions or make comments about our conversation tonight. And while we're waiting for the phone calls to come in, we do have a message we would like to share with you.
You are watching Polygamy, What Love Is This? Broadcasting live from Salt Lake City, Utah. This program is the broadcast outreach of a Shield and Refuge ministry. Shield and Refuge is a point of first contact for Mormon fundamentalists who question the doctrines of the religion or who are actively seeking for an opportunity to escape the polygamist lifestyle. Examining the claims of fundamentalist doctrine against the backdrop of biblical truth is central to our efforts. We invite you to contact us. Call toll-free at 877-425-9993 or email us at tv@aboutpolygamy.com. You are welcome to join us in our monthly support group, Life After Polygamy, where you can meet others like yourself who are searching for answers about polygamy and Mormon fundamentalism. We meet monthly in the Salt Lake City area. For more details about time and place, call us toll-free at 877-425-9993 or email us at tv@aboutpolygamy.com. We want you to know that we have made available to you some outstanding resources free of charge. You will find them at our website, www.whatloveisthis.tv. There you will find the DVD, Lifting the Veil of Polygamy, which documents the real-life stories told firsthand of those who were lifted out of the culture of polygamy through the power and love of Jesus Christ. Also, free of charge to you is the booklet, Is Polygamy Biblical? It explores plural marriage in the context of God's Word and answers questions like, did God ever command polygamy? Is it part of God's plan? While you are at our website, make sure to take advantage of the archived episodes of this program, which can stream on demand directly to your computer. There are more than 100 shows to choose from. And if someone you know is unable to view this program via live broadcast, recommend that they visit this same website every Thursday at 8 p.m. Mountain Time to watch this show through live streaming video. Simply follow the links to the live streaming video page. If you are watching live tonight, We invite you to call us as we open our phone lines. The number is 801-973-TV20. That's 801-973-8820. Now, back to Polygamy, What Love Is This? With our host, Doris Hansen.
Welcome back to the show. We're glad you came back. And we're talking about the Reed-Smoot hearings with Kay Brown as our guest and discussing some of the damning evidence and the lies of the testimony that the Mormon Church and the high officials made during those confirmation hearings and questioning of Reed-Smoot if he should be confirmed as senator of the United States of America. Now, there was a nagging question. We're waiting for phone calls to come in. The lines are lit up, but we don't have the calls ready yet, so we'll continue our discussion here. But there was a nagging question during these hearings of Mormon loyalty to the nation, the United States of America, as well as to the Mormon Church's involvements with commercial and political affairs. Mm-hmm. Now, Reed-Smoot declared that he would not be susceptible to any church influence as a senator, despite their instructions that loyalty to them must supersede all other allegiances. Mm-hmm. The church comes first. That's what they were told. Mm-hmm. And that is one of the reasons that people today are afraid of a Mormon president.
Yeah, yeah. I know I am, just because I know that, you know, there is such loyalty. And so
they make oaths of allegiance mm-hmm. to the church first. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and a Charles H. Jackson, he testified, this was in 1902, that Apostle John Henry Smith went into Boise, Idaho, while the Idaho legislature was in session, and there procured the passage of a resolution as to whether a constitutional convention should be held in Idaho for the purpose of taking out of the state constitution the clause which prohibits polygamy in Idaho. Now, Jackson said, whichever way the Mormons vote, so goes the state. Mm-hmm. And I just want to reiterate, this was after the manifesto. In fact, this was said, was done 12 years.
12 years later.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, you know, did the nation's laws mean nothing to these people?
Mm-mm. Because it was the Supreme Court had ruled against polygamy mm-hmm.
yeah.
already.
And they already had their manifesto in place, should
right.
have been their rules.
Mm-hmm. So the church influenced United States policy, didn't it?
It did. For instance, they fought the lowering of the tariffs for the Philippines because the sugar beet Republicans in the West opposed it. And the LDS Church, now this comes directly from that. That's not our comment on
right,
that. It comes
right.
directly from the testimonies. The LDS Church organization did not want the competition of the Philippine sugar cane, but this suppression of the Philippine sugar imports actually hurt the country as a whole, according to these hearings. Mm-hmm. And during his term as senator from Utah, Smoot co-sponsored the famous, I call it the infamous, Harley-Smoot Tariff Act, which is thought to have exacerbated the Great Depression, which was a monumentally horrible time for the country.
And the church owned the sugar beet uh-huh. and the UNI sugar and all of the industry of sugar here in the West. And that's why mm-hmm. they come out and pressured against the Philippines on that tariff
that's
for the
right.
sugar cane.
They also
so they
owned,
did.
They also owned the salt factories. I had read that Joseph F. Smith owned all but one in the state of Utah of the salt mines.
Wow.
And the church owned that, the other one.
Goodness.
Yeah.
Well, okay, we have Bob calling from Salt Lake City. Let's take his call. Hello, Bob.
Yes.
Yes, you're on the air.
Thank you. My question is, it doesn't seem like you differentiate much, if at all, between the modern LDS Church and the fundamentalists who do practice polygamy. The LDS Church, of course, has not had that practice for over 100 years, and it seems like we should lay that to rest a little bit with the LDS faith.
Bob, we're talking about history right now. We're going back to the 1900s. And we're talking about the Reed-Smoot hearings when the LDS Church did practice polygamy. when it was against the law, and they lied about it and said they weren't practicing polygamy. We're talking history, okay? And when we're talking history, we got to bring out all the facts. So,
well, I think you have a lot of your facts are really not facts.
Have you read the Reed Smoot hearings transcripts? When you've read the Reed Smoot hearings transcripts, then you can call and say we're not telling the facts. But we've read these books and this book and the book that she's got over 700-page book on the Reed Smoot transcripts, and that is what we're talking about tonight. Have you read them?
It just seems to me like you're living in the past, and you know, if you would differentiate between the LDS faith, I think you would acknowledge we're not practicing polygamy now.
Bob, I'm going to hang up right now, and I'll differentiate according to the facts. Thank you. We have the LDS Church today that does not authorize polygamous marriages. We have many polygamous groups today who do practice polygamy. Polygamy was started by the inventor of Mormonism, Joseph Smith. And he said, if you don't live polygamy, you're going to go to hell. Mr. Brigham Young said the same thing. So did John Taylor. So did Wilford Woodruff. So did Orson Pratt. So did Parley P. Pratt. So did Lorenzo Snow. So did Joseph F. Smith. And on it goes. Now, if you want to break that down, we're talking history, and if history is living in the past, then maybe you ought to go out and fire all the historians in the world. Okay, line three, we have Ann from Salt Lake City. Hello, Ann.
Yes.
Yes, you're on the air. What's your question?
Well, I have grave concerns about our government. If these two gentlemen who are LDS are running for president, if either one of them gets in, because I do not feel that the LDS Church is a church, but rather an occult. And I'm wondering what they will do with our, because we have it in our Constitution, a separation of church and state. And if these people are long time ingrained, indoctrinated, to not obey the federal laws of our country, and that they don't have to, which is wrong. And so I'm deeply worried and concerned about what would happen if one of them became president.
Yeah, I feel the same way about that.
Yeah. Issue.
Okay, thank you, Ann. Yeah, thank
well,
you for
thank
your call.
You.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of people who are concerned about that. You know, we can't say what will or will not happen.
No.
I do know that they make oaths, like we mm-hmm. already talked about, mm-hmm. that their first allegiance is to the church, not to the nation, but mm-hmm. to the church. We do know that that happens.
To follow the prophet.
And that, mm-hmm. So we don't know. We just know that the concern is there, and we should be concerned about it. Very concerned. Mm-hmm. Another monumental question that came up from the evidence that was presented to the hearings was that the church authorities themselves not only continued to contract new polygamous marriages, but performed them for others. And mm-hmm. this came up during the testimony. President Smith promised that he would do what he could do to have some of these men appear before the Senate committees to testify. Yeah. But all of these people that he promised to bring to them, they had excuses for not coming, and they actually ran away. They didn't come, and in fact, some of them even ran out of the country, either to Canada
right.
or to Mexico. That kind of shows where their allegiance was there, too.
Yeah.
It wasn't to the country or to their civic duty, but mm-hmm. to the church. Some of them didn't ever show up for the hearings, and of course, that was in defiance of the United States government, not to their new country.
That's right. Yeah, speaking to the University of Utah, Heber J. Grant bragged of having plural wives, and the result was that a warrant was issued for his arrest. But before Sheriff Frank Emery could deliver the warrant to the apostle's house, Grant was tipped off and was already speeding eastward. That's a quote. And there was a newspaper quote. The Herald was, this is the quote from the newspaper. The Herald was informed last evening that on Tuesday evening, Apostle Grant got on the Rio Grande train from the west side of the yards, catching the smoking car as the train pulled out. The train was an hour late out of Salt Lake. I had not the slightest idea he would try to escape, said Sheriff Emery. I supposed he would submit to the warrant without question.
Now, I'd like to make a mention right here that Heber J. Grant was a polygamist and became president of the Mormon Church. Mm-hmm. So we can see the characterization, the character of these people that were supposedly not running, you know, not going to lead the church people astray. Yet they themselves...
Evasion of the law,
didn't
actually.
Didn't even have the integrity to stand up for what was right.
Mm-hmm. And in the year 1904, Mr. Powers tells that Heber J. Grant stated at the University of Utah to the young men and women there, a state institution supported by the taxes of Mormons and Gentiles, and this is a quote, and he made a contribution of $150. He told them it was $50 for himself and $50 for each wife, having two. And he said that he regretted that the laws prevented him from having more. There had been several hundred students there at, you know, the time of this speech.
The laws prevented him from having more than two. It prevented him from having two.
I know. So, if it weren't so sad, it would be terribly funny.
He was given a reason why he wasn't giving more than $150. If the law let him have 12 wives, he would have been giving $600.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Another telling thing was, as the leadership of the Mormon Church is on trial and they're found to be lying in their testimony and prevaricating and some of them not even showing up for the hearings, even though they're asked to come, Smoot finally offered to resign his senatorial seat. And he said that he would rather leave than bring sorrow on the Mormon Church. Their dishonesty was prevailing, and further testimony continued to reveal their lies and deceit. And Smoot, rather than let the church be embarrassed, said, I'll just resign my seat rather than this go on.
There was too much exposure going on by their own doing.
By their own doing. Yeah. In the entire media of the country was picking up on all this, and it was pretty devastating to them.
Unfortunately, and one thing I just want to say right here is the only reason we share this is not to mock, to make fun, but this is out of love that people can know the truth, because truth matters, and you know everything is based on truth. If you have that, you have everything.
That's right. Absolutely right. And we do urge you to check these things out for yourself. If you don't believe what we're saying, as our first caller tonight didn't, pick up the Reed Smoot hearings and study these things out for yourself. Jesus said the root bears the fruit. And if this is the root of the Mormon Church and the polygamous groups, for heaven's sakes, the truth is worth finding out. Mm-hmm. Okay, on line two, we have Chrissy from Salt Lake City calling. Hello, Chrissy. Hello, Chrissy.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
You're on the air.
Hi. I just want to know where you are getting the facts on polygamous. And how Parley P. Pratt and everyone was saying that if you are polygamous, like if you're not polygamous, you're going to die in hell or something like that. Where were you getting that facts?
Where did I get that information?
Where did you get that information?
Well, read section 132 of the Doctrine and Covenants.
Uh-huh.
Read section 132, and Joseph Smith said that if you don't abide by this covenant, which is the covenant of polygamy, you will be damned. And Brigham Young over and over again said that those who don't live and abide by this law will be damned. Orson Pratt in The Seer and in his speech in 1852 when he made the polygamy revelation public, you will be damned if you don't practice polygamy. It's all through early Mormon history.
Doris, can I share this really quick?
Yes.
Maybe this will help answer the question. Under oath, Talmage explained that celestial marriage originally meant plural marriage, and at the turn of the century, it was defined to mean eternal marriage, and the Doctrine and Covenants was edited at that time. Now, this is the deceit that has gone on. That's why the younger generations do not know what has really gone on in their history, is because changes are made continually. And so you have to understand that when you read section 132, it really does talk about plurality of wives. And it even talks about it in the heading. And if you read the heading, you will see it there. And of course, this is Joseph Smith talking to Emma. and talking about her upcoming damnation if she does not go along with polygamy.
He said she should be destroyed if she didn't go along with it.
Now, this was under oath at the Senate committee, so you need to understand that it's really the truth. That is what was originally meant, and it was only changed for convenience sake.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's absolutely true. So did that help you, Chrissy?
But when it comes to Joseph Smith's first marriage, it was with Emma Smith, and it was before the polygamy rule came around, and that was a celestial marriage.
What?
He only asked for the polygamy to start after all the guys were basically dead.
Whoa, Chrissy, Joseph Smith had 34 wives himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Documented histories.
You bet. 34 documented wives Joseph Smith had before he was killed in 1844. He took his first wife, Fanny Alger, about 1831 or 1833, depending on which historical events you can take on. But he had 34 wives. Heber C. Kimball had 45 wives.
And 11 of those 34 were polyandrous marriages where they could remain married to their husbands, but Joseph Smith also had access to them as their husband. They married him. The women then were living in polyandry, 11 of those. Now, this is a historian who compiled their journals, and he's an LDS historian. This is really fact that we're sharing with you about this. And so if you want to read In Sacred Loneliness by Todd Compton, that book is the compilation of their histories, and you will know the facts. You will get to see the truth, not something that you will ever hear over the pulpit.
That's right. Okay, we've got a couple more calls to take, so we thank you for your call, Chrissy. Okay, line one, we have Mike in Salt Lake City. Hello, Mike.
How are you doing?
Very good, thank you.
I've been listening to you tonight, and it's really weird, but the confusion. I mean, they say one thing and they do another, and it drives me crazy. Consenting for something is when you don't prosecute it or you condone it. You know, and polygamy is legal in this state, and that's just all
in that respect.
Because they don't do anything about it, and you know, it does breed incest, child abuse. Fraud in the federal government, in food stamps, and health care. It doesn't hold these men accountable to these women if they do want to leave, because the state doesn't prosecute them. But if a man has a child with another woman outside of polygamy, then they will chase him down. He can't get a driver's license or anything else, and these guys can have 20, 10 wives or whatever, and 100-some-odd kids. It's incredible.
Yes.
You know, I don't understand, how they get away with it, to be truthful.
Yeah.
You know, it just amazes me that people are not rational when it comes to these things. I mean, it's adultery.
That's true.
Polyandry is wife swapping. Let's put it in layman's terms.
Yes, absolutely.
You're
right. Happening
in the world now if you do this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's totally disingenuous to us people that are trying to keep the law and have to live by the law, and they get away with it.
And Mike, we appreciate your comments, and I would just like to say right here at this point, I'd like to again direct our viewers' attention to this ministry that Kay talked about at the beginning of the show, where she is gathering names regarding this situation with polygamy. And if anybody wants to get on the bandwagon and help out as we try and bring this into the attention of the legislators, contact her. What's your speaking?
Speaking Up for Truth.
Speaking Up for
the
Truth.
The number four.
At
truth.
gmail.com. And let's get some people on the bandwagon to help out with this. Sister Wives is going all over the country making this look like a viable lifestyle, and it's illegal. And just like Mike said, so... give her an email and talk to her about it. And we have one more call, Mike from Ogden, but we don't have time to take it. So, Mike, if you want to leave your phone number or your message that you wanted to say, please, and we'll call you back, or you can call back next week. And Kay, thanks for coming tonight. We do appreciate your input. We did get a lot of our information done. When I was growing up in polygamy, we were incessantly drilled on how to be careful about saying anything to the wrong people that would expose our polygamous lifestyle. They said that it was up to us to protect God and His kingdom, even by lying when necessary. On this show, however, we are pleased to inform our viewers that God doesn't, in fact, God cannot lie. God doesn't ask us to lie for Him. He doesn't need protecting, and He certainly wouldn't deal in deceit under any circumstances. In John 8:44, Jesus tells us that the father of lies is the devil, that old serpent who was the first liar, and that those who follow him and his lies are his children. They are not the children of God. Thankfully, Jesus Christ, who is not the devil's brother, but is God himself, he loves us enough, and he loves us so much that he died on the cross for liars, so that when sinners truly repent, he will be forgiven of all sin, he'll be given for all lives, for cleansed of all unrighteousness, and those are the only people that will be found in heaven. Jesus did all the works needed for us to get to heaven so that we can be forgiven and that we can have eternal life, which is his gift to us. This gift is for all who will receive it, trusting in Jesus alone as a child implicitly trusts his own father. Repent means to turn. It means you go God's way, not the way of your church or the way of your forefathers or the way of Joseph Smith. It means you trust Jesus Christ, God himself, for your forgiveness and for your eternal life. And if you depend on any other thing or person, you are rejecting God's way. And if you reject his way, you've rejected eternal life. God will never change to conform to our ideas. It's us who must change to conform to his. Good night.
This has been the audio podcast edition of Polygamy, What Love Is This? This program is a production of A Shield and Refuge Ministry and Main Street Church of Brigham City. You can view current and past video episodes as well as download audio episodes of this program at whatloveisthis.tv. If you or someone you know is in need of assistance in leaving a polygamous situation, please contact us. We are here to help. All of our contact information can be found at shieldandrefuge.org or call us at 877-425-9993. If you have any questions or comments about this or any of our other programs, we'd love to hear from you. Write us at email@whatloveisthis.tv. Thanks for listening, and we hope you'll join us again.